Robots Radio. Games. Lore. Stories. Community. Just press play.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome, weary traveler. Need a short rest? Oh, I see. They said you'd be showing up about now. Come on, through the portal. Best not keep the Lore Mistress and Lore Master waiting. You know how they get.
Robots Radio presents the Dungeons & Dragons Lorecast. The best way for everyone from experienced dungeon masters to those curious about D&D to learn more about the worlds, creatures, and lore of Dungeons & Dragons.
Hello and welcome to the Dungeons & Dragons Lorecast. My name is Sergio.
And I am Mary.
What?
I am. It's true.
As those of you who have been listening, you're well aware, Mary had to step aside from lore casting duties. We reached out like, hey, like let's get you on at least once a month. You know, you can't stay away for too long.
I can't. I really can't. And I do miss it terribly. I have so many extracurricular activities that the kids are doing. It is insane.
You need to get rid of those kids.
They're pretty good kids.
They're getting in the way of your nerding.
I'm going to have one less kid in school next year. I have one that graduates this year.
Yeah, we have on over here on our side, we have about 6 more years and counting down the days.
Yeah, I've got one that graduates this year. One will graduate in 2 years and the other will graduate in like 4.
Well, until then, your lore casting abilities will be, it's almost like you're in a wild magic zone. Like you're not sure what's going to happen. You're not exactly sure if you'll be able to lore cast or not.
The most accurate description of my house that I have ever heard. It's a wild magic zone. Yes.
But yeah,
100%.
Like, you know, like we said initially, what was it, a month or so back? You're definitely not going away. You're much still involved on the Discord and in the community in general. But this is just part of that. You know, you're going to be on doing at least one episode, possibly a patron roundtable.
Try to knock a little extra stuff out with the end of the year. There should be a lull, so I should be able to get some stuff in this next couple months, and then spring will get crazy again, and then I will exhale once summer happens.
Well, this week we are discussing some of your favorite types of creatures. You're talking some of your father your
family tradition.
I was going to say Father Mary. Father like Mary. Family name.
Yes, yes.
Some of his favorite creatures, yes. The dragon, but mm-hmm. not just any type of dragon, the gem dragon.
You lured me in with shiny objects is what you did.
I did. I was like, hey, you're can you do one episode a month? And you're like, well, maybe.
Yeah, sure, maybe, yeah. What are we talking about? Oh, lots of shiny things. You'll love it. Okay.
You're like, yes, please, and thank you.
Yes.
So gem dragons, yes. They are a subcategory of dragons with crystalline scales, and they spend much of their time on the inner planes.
Mm-hmm.
They are all psionically powerful, although to most observers, to the layman, their psychic talents are pretty much indistinguishable from regular sorcery. I say regular sorcery, like just run-of-the-mill magic.
You just pick it up at the corner store, just a little sorcery. You know.
If I saw a humanoid casting a spell, and then I saw a dragon casting a similar spell, I wouldn't be like, oh, I bet he's got psionic powers. No, I mean, it's all freaking magic to me.
Yeah. You're right.
I mean, I'm sure someone, you know, with a more magical bent would be able to discern that, but
they will actually you.
Yeah, exactly. I'm like, oh, this guy again. He's like other dragons, the neutral gem dragon, dragons are winged reptilian beings, known and feared for, you know, both their physical prowess and their magical abilities. They have a reputation for being very charismatic and suave.
Same. And,
girl, what else you got? Yeah, so far.
That's all I got. Look, charisma is my dump stat. Charisma is my dump stat. That's it. That's what I got going for me.
They delight in riddles. They're masters of persuasion, and they use their magic and psionics as well as just as their natural charisma, their mm-hmm. natural riz, as the Gen Zers are saying.
Oh, as the kids say, they are rizzed up.
They are rizzed out the game. Gem dragons can also be aloof or solitary, even self-centered, especially some of the older worms.
I mean, maybe you should stay off their lawn.
I'm saying, you know, like back in their day, when multiple gem dragons are encountered, it's usually a young mated pair. They're usually smaller and slower than their metallic or chromatic counterparts, but they have like other abilities to compensate. I mean, just so don't get it twisted. Gem dragons are just as dangerous.
It's a dragon. I feel like anybody that assumes a dragon's not dangerous is
yeah, but he's
a fool.
Not as big. Like, okay, sir, I'm going to need you to take all the seats.
I'm going to get every seat, please. I'm just saying, some of the most vicious little folks I know are them little bitty stocky dudes.
Those are the ones
you got to worry about.
Speaking of vicious little dudes, I ran my X-Crawl playtest at the Long Con this past weekend. A fun time was had by all. And I had one player death in the first room, which was just these little like mushroom like folk that maybe like come up like a foot high, you know,
aww,
like shin high. One of them died as a result of their attack.
Were the mushroom guys talking shiitake?
I don't miss that. I don't miss that at all.
That's a lie. Shit-talking.
So you can't underestimate the
never underestimate the little guy.
The little guy or gal or mushroom thing person.
Right.
So these gem dragons at first glance may be mistaken for other similarly colored species, like the crystal dragon could be mistaken for the white dragon, topaz for yellow, emerald mm-hmm. for green, so on and so forth. But the environments where they are encountered should indicate, you know, otherwise. You should give you a good idea of what's what. And also, when gem dragons are seen in a bright light, their sparkling hides easily identify them as well.
I love it.
No, yeah, it's great. I mean, imagine seeing a dragon and then, like, it it lands in the sunlight and just starts to sparkle everywhere. You're like, this is awesome.
See, I collect all sorts of, like, I guess gemstones or healing stones, crystals, whatever you want to call them. I collect a lot of them. I think they're neat. I enjoy very pretty shiny rocks.
You just think they're neat. You think gem colored rocks are neat? I think potatoes are neat.
Oh, hell yeah. Potatoes are the best. Yeah. So just it, I just love them so much because I can, it's the mental image for me, all the shininess and the sound of them. Satisfies my little druid soul.
Oh, we'll talk about druids a little bit later on, which is, it's very cool. So these neutral dragons are fearsome predators, but they will scavenge when necessary. They have very efficient metabolisms, can't relate, which can make use of practically anything the dragon eats.
No, not I don't understand that at all.
Yeah, like efficient metabolism.
What does this mean?
That's, I feel like a contradiction.
Like 20 years ago, maybe.
I look at pictures of me and my best friends from high school, and like, at all we ate was Taco Bell and McDonald's. All we drank was Dr. Pepper, and we are just rail thin.
Yep.
Just absolutely face babies, not same. Realizing the world is going to crush us. But mostly gem dragons subsist on at least partially on inorganic material, like particularly the appropriate type of gem that they are. But however, living primarily on the inner planes has caused gem dragons to develop unusual diets. And when I read that line, I'm like, oh, here we go. Here it comes. Okay. It's not as bad as you would think, though. Cool. While they do enjoy variety in their meals, they can survive indefinitely by consuming elemental matter. Again, not as bad as what the prior sentence
led one
to believe.
Little dirt eaters?
Little dirt eaters, air eaters, water drinkers.
Okay, dragons chasing down clouds to eat them is kind of the cutest mental image I've had in a hot minute.
Right, and so hearing you develop unusual diets, immediately I'm thinking, like, oh, dang it, they're eating corpses. They're like, shish kebab with rats and other varmints. No, just eating clouds and stuff.
Or buildings that are made from stone.
Yeah, like adobe huts and stuff. Gem dragons are not native to the inner planes, but they do have like some favorite environments.
Okay.
And like all dragons, gem dragons are incredibly covetous. They hoard wealth, collecting mounds of coins and gathering as many gems and jewels and magic items and bits and baubles as possible.
Right.
Those with large hoards become slightly paranoid. I mean,
as one does.
It's giving Howard Hughes. It's, like being locked up for so long and kind of, your giant mansion, your giant cavern filled with all your treasures, you're going to go a little crazy.
It's true.
Going to go a little paranoid. So they only venture out of their lairs to patrol the immediate area or to get food. Because for dragons, there is never, ever enough treasure.
I get it.
I mean, I can't be mad if I have, I mean, we see that with, with the Bezoses and the Zuckerbergs and the Gateses of the world. I say they're dragons in human forms. Dragons can take human forms. For all we know, Jeff Bezos is a dragon parading around the material plane like a human.
I mean, okay, so I hoard things, but I hoard small trinkets. Like, there's an obscene number of them. It's a lot. My whole desk is covered in tiny little trinkets and stuff. So I get it. It's not that my hoard is expensive or that anybody would actually want to take it, but I do guard it really jealously at times. I get this feeling.
I get the execution is different, but the idea is the same.
It's just like the wish.com version. It's much cheaper.
There are a handful of different types of gem dragons. There's the amethyst, the emerald, the sapphire, the topaz, and the crystal. Those are the main types of gem dragons. We're going to discuss those in the first half of the show. And in the second half of the show, we're going to discuss a trio of the more obscure gem dragons, the obsidian dragon, the amber dragon, and the Belgeril dragon. So up first, we've got the amethyst dragon. They are wise and regal, and they sometimes serve as intermediaries between either warring dragons or even humanoid civilizations. But they sometimes have to be convinced to do so, because otherwise they just ignore what they consider to be petty squabbles between, you know, silly things like good and evil, law and chaos.
Right. Petty, silly little things that mean nothing.
So an amethyst dragon has lavender skin and scales that are shaped like naturally formed mineral crystals. And when it first hatches, its scales are a light, translucent purple shade. And as it grows older, they gradually darken and take on like a more crystalline quality. And you'll see that in the description of most of these gem dragons that when they're born, they appear one way. And as they get older, they sort of mature, like, you know, like the grain of one's hair or losing of it. In some cases.
I was going to say like crystals form naturally.
Or a more relatable analogy.
I mean,
I don't know anything about crystals. All I know about crystals is that I went to high school with one, and she was a cheerleader, and we were on the newspaper staff together. She was pretty cool.
That's all right.
So
fair enough.
Shout out Crystal from the newspaper staff. So most amethyst dragons live in hollowed out spaces on the elemental plane of Earth. These caverns can consist of many passages and chambers that are just resplendent with crystals of all types of colors. Younger amethyst dragons, they avoid combat by flying away if possible, and older ones will use their special abilities to improve their chances of catching a target flat-footed. But even adults will flee if it's obvious that after the first few rounds of combat, that if they can't overpower their opposition, that's when they'll burn off.
Oh, they're smart.
They are. I mean, yeah, they're dragons. They're smart. Not like most PC parties. Like, okay, you're level one. You come across a Terrisk. What do you do? Like, well, I guess we're gonna fight it. Like, no, you're not. No. Okay.
Why? Can I ask why? Do you hate the character you just created? Is that why? Do you hate being who you are? Do you want to talk about that?
Talk about that. But if an amethyst dragon is fighting to protect its lair or its young, it will, it will seldom flee the battle. It'll stick around regardless.
That's where the line is then.
Right, right. Up next, we've got emerald dragons. Emerald dragons are inquisitive. In particular about local history and customs, and often their knowledge of a particular area in those subjects, it surpasses that of the best sage.
Ooh.
However, these dragons are very paranoid, so developing even a passing acquaintance with one can be quite difficult.
Challenge accepted.
I can imagine, like, yeah, you're like, he just needs to open up. He just needs to get to know the real me.
Mm-hmm.
I could see you wearing down an emerald dragon. Like, all right, fine, just come. Like, have you seen About a Boy?
No.
Of course not. So About a Boy, really quickly, it's a very charming film. It's one of my favorites. It's about a lot of different things, but there's one part of the movie where this like kind of like middle school age kid, for one reason or another, like tries to get goes to this goes to Hugh Grant's house, goes to his flat, and just keeps showing up. And the guy's like, "No, like I don't want anything to do with you. Like you're a kid. Like I'm like," but he just keeps showing up. And finally, he's just like, "All right, come in." Like, and so that's how like their friendship starts. I have this very distinct image in my head of Hugh Grant opening the door and just kind of like not saying anything, just kind of like motioning him in, like, yeah, come on. Come on.
There'd be a deep sigh to go with it.
Yeah, yeah. So that's you and an emerald dragon.
Uh-huh. I'm okay with this.
That's fine. Absolutely. That is another TV show idea for D&D Adventures. The Fast TV channel.
I'd be in. It'd be fun.
Mary and the Emerald Dragon.
It's like a buddy movie, buddy show. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So the scales of a wormling emerald dragon are translucent and sea green, and as it ages, those scales harden and take on every shade of green, from deep emerald to mint green.
Oh,
and they scintillate even in the dimmest of lights. Another cool thing is that an emerald dragon's pupils fade as they get older. So by the time it becomes a great worm, its eyes are featureless, and they
how cool like, is that?
glowing green orbs.
It's just the coolest.
So the typical emerald dragon likes to settle near an area that is at least partly inhabited by civilized beings of any type, but not so much so that its presence becomes generally known.
Same.
I mean, that makes sense for where you actually live.
Where I actually live, yeah. That's like pretty much my dream, my goal.
Knowing where you live, I'm like, yeah. Like, it's like, you know, there's enough over there, but not too much.
Exactly.
That would always just bug the crap out of me, is like going over to my mom's, because like she lives, you know,
like
close 20? Enough that you can get stuff. You know, it's not like, well, we're going into town once a month. But everything is like 20 minutes away.
Everything is about 10 to 15. Some of it's as far as 30 minutes away. But yeah, it just depends on how long I want to be driving.
Yeah, if you forget something at the store, you're just going to have to do without.
Oh, no, Walmart delivery delivers here.
Oh, well, then you're good.
I'm good. Yeah, it's wonderful. Because I don't have to go there.
I don't have to leave. On the material plane, emerald dragons make their lairs in the cones of extinct or at least seldom active volcanoes. While on the inner planes, these dragons still watch over their, you know, favored material plane spots. Their favorite material plane haunts. Emerald dragons nurture their wormlings, so any given lair of a young adult or just any older dragon is likely to also include at least one wormling. As a result of this, they're quite distrustful of visitors, and their lairs bristle with hidden traps and both magic and mundane alarms. And should these measures fail to deter these visitors, an emerald dragon first hides with an improved invisibility spell, but then reveals its presence should its treasure or the hatchlings or wormlings become threatened.
Oh.
So again, another instance of like not really trying to get into it, but if my lair or my babies are being threatened, like it's going to be a fight.
So much messing around and finding out.
I mean, like, you're right. Like, yeah, if you're
that's my theory.
If you're messing around in a dragon's lair, messing around with these hatchlings or wormlings,
you are literally asking for it.
You are playing a dangerous game.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Your cojones are absurd.
Absurd cojones. That's the name of my new band. So sapphire dragons are up next, and while not actively hostile, sapphire dragons are still quite territorial, in particular when it comes to other dragons that encroach on their territories, either on the material plane of Earth, where they usually stay, or in the areas of the material plane that they call their own.
Gotcha.
So sapphire dragons tend to be antisocial toward all beings. Again, not seeing the problem here.
But
they also view the evil races of the Underdark as particular enemies, and sometimes come into direct conflict with them over underground territory.
Interesting.
So, and like what's wild is like you look up the artwork for a Sapphire Dragon and they look so evil. They look, and you know, you can't judge a book by its cover, but these things look super evil. And I can tell you that because they look super awesome.
Oh, so that's how you knew they looked really cool.
Yeah, like, oh, these look awesome. They must be evil. Like, what?
You gotta be the evil ones.
They're neutral? Okay. So these dragons don't go in for small talk unless the discussion revolves around military strategy, a subject on which they consider themselves to be experts, if not geniuses. So, you know, not much for, you know, humility there. They're very old. I mean, if you don't become a genius in something at 1200, if you haven't, you know,
what are you
point,
really doing with your life?
It's like, you know, like if you've been a vampire for 600 years and you're still broke, like what are you even doing?
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Oh.
So, like I said, they consider themselves geniuses at military strategy. And they even may forgive, you know, unwanted or unwarranted visitors of their presence if they offer it a game of strategy. Of course, it's never wise to beat a dragon. So
contest them, but let them win. But don't let them know that you're letting them win.
Right. In the Good words luck. Of Han Solo, let the Wookiee win. Their scales range from light to dark blue in color. And they scintillate in any light, creating this cascade of ghostly glints on the walls of their caverns in which these creatures often lair. They're actually, because of the dark blue color, they're often mistaken for blue dragons, unless someone then recalls like where each dragon kind of makes their home. Like,
yeah,
if you're in the Underdark and you see what appears to be a blue dragon, you're probably
not. Oh, wait.
This is where sapphire dragons live, right.
Yeah, blue dragons are a desert dwelling.
Yeah, so that's why you need the lore. You need to know what you're dealing with.
Gotta know your dragons.
You gotta know your dragons, you gotta know your lore.
That's why we're here.
Unlike the scales of other gem dragons, those of a sapphire dragon don't change as a creature ages.
Oh.
Although its pupils do fade with time. So by the time it becomes a great worm, its eyes are these like featureless glowing sapphire orbs, like we're right in the middle of their skull.
That's exactly what you want to run into in the freaking Underdark.
Right.
Glowing blue eyes.
These dragons love the elemental plane of earth, but they also like to live in deep, dry, rocky caverns on the material plane. Should you find yourself in one of their lairs, you could often find drow, mind flayer, aboleth trophies being prominently displayed, you know, to remind the dragon of past victories. And they also allow large monstrous spiders to roam about, but only as a handy source of food.
Oh, jeepers.
Right.
Poor things.
And so to keep those creatures close, the dragon will allow, you know, the spider's favorite prey species to inhabit portions of its lair. So,
because you gotta feed your farm. They're farming spiders. And you gotta feed your product, I guess. Goodness.
It all makes sense in this weird, disgusting way.
That totally makes sense. Anywhere outside this conversation, that sentence would not be appropriate.
No. Yeah, there are definite calls to HR or, you know, to the
She just says the weirdest things sometimes. This is why I work from home.
Yeah, exactly.
People here know I say weird stuff all the time.
That's why at my job, I make sure, like, everyone, like, look, that all I do is talk and think about D&D. So if I say anything off the wall, just assume it's D&D related. So topaz dragons are up next. Mm-hmm. They tend to be unfriendly and selfish. Although they're not exactly malevolent, their erratic behavior makes any dealings with them very unpleasant and pretty dangerous.
Oh.
Yeah. They neither seek company nor welcome it. And a topaz wormling scales are dull yellow, you know, at when it's young with mm-hmm. orange highlights. And as it ages, its color slowly brightens until individual scales become scarcely visible. Ooh. And so from a distance, it looks, you know, the topaz dragon looks like it's been sculpted from pure topaz. It just looks like neat. One giant piece.
They are of so topaz. Pretty.
And this was my favorite, that, you know, it's as it ages, its pupils fade. And so mm-hmm. by the time it becomes a great worm, its eyes resemble glowing orbs of fire. And I'm like, that's cool.
Oh, they're so cool. I just want
one. They spend most of their time on the elemental plane of water. And during their brief forays onto the material plane, they lair on secluded beaches, caves below the waterline. Mm-hmm. But even on the elemental plane of water, they keep their lairs completely dry. They love to lounge on outcroppings that are lashed by waves and wind-blasted sea spray. And of course, you know, these vantages also allow them to spot passing prey, such as sharks and large squid. I love how the sharks and the large squids, which you would think are like the apex predators of mm-hmm. the ocean, like those are the passing prey that a topaz dragon would be like, oh, I'm going to take that great white. There you go. Nom.
Oh, I could snack on a whale today. I'm feeling a little peckish.
but because they inhabit similar territories, topaz dragons and bronze dragons often come into conflict, and duels between the two are often furious and deadly.
I'm rather fond of bronze dragons as well. They're one of my favorite sorts. Just the thought of living in like the seaside cave and collecting all the treasures from the ocean.
All the stuff from like shipwrecks and stuff.
Yeah.
They generally dislike intruders, but they prefer to begin any potential confrontation with conversation.
And
they then quickly attack intruders who either prove hostile or boring. So you better come with some icebreakers or something, like come some good stories for this topaz dragon.
This dragon's like, you're boring me. I'm going to kill you now. I'm sorry. I apologize profusely for such things.
No, learn some good jokes. I don't know. And before we take our break, we're going to talk about crystal dragons. They are the friendliest of the gem dragons, the Labradors of the gem dragons.
That's what I was picturing, this golden retriever energy.
They are always curious about the world, and though they seldom seek out company, they enthusiastically converse with willing visitors who don't try to steal from them.
I'm just picturing Ed from Ed and Eddie.
Right.
It's the voice for them. It's just beautiful.
A wormling crystal dragon's scales are glossy white, and as it ages, these scales become translucent, mm-hmm. and moonlight or starlight causes them to luminesce, and full sunlight lends them this dazzling brilliance that's almost unbearable to look at.
Aww.
Crystal dragons prefer the elemental plane of air, but they sometimes build incredible ice palaces atop high cold mountain peaks on the material plane, where they can watch the stars and create sculptures out of ice and snow. Everything about like this Elsa. So far is just charming AF.
It is. They're so precious.
White dragons and crystal dragons sometimes come into conflict. Crystal dragons have been known to make off with white dragon eggs, possibly to foster the white wormlings and help them grow into a friendlier dragon than they would otherwise become, being raised by awful, evil white dragons.
I kidnap somebody else's kid, so hopefully they'll have a good influence on my little shits. That's what I'm getting here.
I mean, the logic is a little skewed. It's like, look, your parents are awful, so I'm going to kidnap you so I can raise you to be a good person. I mean, the logic is, it's a little wonky, but I can see the through line. However, beautiful. You know, such white dragons, in these circumstances are extremely rare.
Right.
Again, not to say that doesn't happen. So perhaps you do meet a golden retriever type white dragon.
I love it so
crystal
much.
Dragons tend to bear great enmity toward any local giants, since the latter occasionally joined forces with white dragons to go hunting for crystal dragon lairs or crystal dragon wormlings.
Oh, they even have that energy in their picture.
Well, like I said, that's those are the main gem dragons. We're going to take the middle of the show break, and when we come back, we're going to talk about the more rare gem dragons.
Ooh.
Hey there, Dungeon Masters. Ever wished for a tool to help design your worlds and campaigns? Introducing Epic World Builder, the app that turns those dreams into reality. Craft intricate dungeons populated with creatures from the abyss, or cities with secrets hidden around every corner. Join a community of dreamers and world builders sharing and exploring each other's creations. Create your free campaign today with EpicWorldBuilder.com. EpicWorldBuilder.com, where your world comes to life.
Welcome to the middle of the show. This is where we do all our housekeeping stuff, all the middle-y of the show type stuff. First and foremost, we want to thank you for listening. Thank you for supporting the show by listening on Spotify or Apple Podcasts, whatever it may be that you listen on. If you're doing that, it's more than enough. But if we could ask you to just do one more thing, it would be to leave us a good review. Let others know that you're enjoying the show. Let us know what you enjoyed the most about it, what we could work on, all that fun stuff. Additionally, if you want to support the show in other ways, you can definitely go on to all the different social medias, your Threads and your Blue Skies and your X's and your Twitches and Instagram, all that fun stuff, and follow us there. We're pretty much everywhere. We are at DND Lorecast. The branding, if nothing else, the branding is on point. Also, we want to give a special shout out to all of our patrons out there over at the patreon.com/DND Lorecast. We've got some cool stuff. If you're not a member, those fair folk of the Patreon that we're thanking right now, they already know what kind of cool stuff we got, because they get their grubby little hands on it each and every month. I don't know why I just described the patrons, who are some of my favorite people in the world, as having grubby hands, but you know what? That's what it is. That's such what came out of my heart. That's how I feel, I guess. But yeah, we have cool stuff. We have bonus content. In fact, there for every month, there are a couple of Patreon Plus installments, which are kind of like deeper dives into some of the lore we talk about. For example, this month we covered the Book of and Deck of Many Things, the newest release from Wizards. Well, we did a Patreon Plus installment that was a deep dive into the deity Istis, which plays a pivotal role in the lore behind the Deck of Many Things. Additionally, we'll have a Patreon Plus installment. For this episode, we'll be covering the Rage of Dragons. So if you want to get those Patreon Plus installments plus and a full-blown, full-on actual bonus episode each and every month, you can go over to, like I said, patreon.com/DNDLorecast and sign up for the scholar tier. The apprentice tier will get you the back catalog of all the episodes that Tom and Stuart did before the changeover, before we took over the reins. And then we have other tiers beyond that. You know, the wizard tier will get you free merchandise. You can get yourself invited to the patron roundtable discussion episodes, plus something else that we got cooking in the cauldron, which I'll go ahead and announce now. The D&D Lorecast is working on actual play episodes. They will kind of take the place of the patron roundtables, which we will still have about every quarter or so. But the fourth Saturday of every month will be an actual play episode. And the format that we're thinking of is that they'll be broken up. They'll be about an hour to an hour and a half each, roughly. And then they'll be like one-shot adventures. So, you know, a one-shot typically takes anywhere from 3 to 5 hours. And so that span of time will be broken up, you know, like I said, between an hour, hour and a half. And so it'll take about 2-3 months or so. So you'll have an entire, you know, show, an entire episode, entire adventure or module over the course of, you know, 3 to 4 months. And we'll be inviting special guests, of course, you know, wizard patrons, deity patrons as well. There'll be a rotating cast. You know, Mary will show up for sure, 100%. As soon as I brought the idea up to her, she's like, I am all in. And so, yeah, so it's really fun, really cool. If there are any adventures in particular that you want us to run, or writers in general that you want us to check out to see which of their adventures we'd want to run, definitely hit us up, dndlorecast@gmail.com, all the aforementioned social media websites, and of course our own Discord. The Discord is always on and popping. We're always talking about something D&D related, something math rock related, something nerd related for sure. But it's very exciting, and we can expect to see that changeover happen at the beginning of 2024. So yeah, we'll have our first actual play episode at the end of January. So again, very, very excited about that. As far as there's a really like, that's more like D&D Lorecast news, because there's not a whole lot of D&D news, official news right now. Obviously they just released, at least digitally, the Book of Many Things, still waiting on word for when the physical version will be fixed and released. The D&D Adventures free ad-supported television channel is now live. You can get it on Plex, on Freevee. I couldn't, maybe it's the old man in me. I could figure out Freevee. I couldn't find it, or at least I couldn't figure out an easy way to search for the D&D Adventures channel on Freevee. I was able to find it really easily on Plex. So I've been watching on Plex. Like when I'm working at home, I have it on a browser in the background, and every so often I'll pop over and just, you know, see what Eric and Presto and all of them are up to. As far as homebrew shenanigans are concerned, because Planescape just came out a little while ago, there's been a bunch of cool Planescape homebrew stuff on DM's Guild. I'm going to highlight Manual of the Planes. Now, this comes from the creators of the Draconomicon, Tasha's Crucible of Everything Else, and of course, everyone's favorite, the Honkonomicon. This comes from QL Games, as well as a slew of other creators. The Manual of the Planes, an invaluable definitive work of the most fascinating aspect of the world's greatest role-playing game. A vital source book for players and DMs of all levels of experience, the Manual of the Planes details the manifold worlds of the Great Wheel, the most popular cosmological model of the multiverse. This book describes the layers, locations, and denizens of these worlds, as well as ideas for creator character creation and building planar adventures in these alien surroundings. A different style of D&D adventure awaits. Of course, completely compatible with 5e and Planescape Adventures in the Multiverse. You've got over a dozen new feats. You've got a handful of new spells, new species, new items. The entire thing looks, it's a good chunker of a book. You can get the PDF right now for $29.99. Again, it's a little pricier than the stuff that we usually highlight on the DM's Guild corner, the homebrew corner, whatever we call it now. A bit pricier than what we usually highlight, but definitely worth every single penny. I mean, this is essentially this has the look and feel and quality. Some would argue more so, considering the quality of some more recent Wizards titles, but the quality of an official book. And like I said, I mean that in the best possible way. So $29.99 is essentially the cost of what you would pay for an official book. And the writers have already stated that, hopefully the hardcover edition will be out early next year. So if you are a fiend for physical D&D media, like I am myself, you might want to wait. I personally can't wait. I'm going to pick myself up a digital copy of this so I can start looking it over. And hopefully maybe they can coordinate some kind of discount when the hardcover comes out. But if not, then I'll probably end up getting that too, and giving my money to smaller creators, the homebrew community of D&D. So that being said, let's go ahead and wrap up the middle of the show and head on back to the lore. Welcome back from the middle of the show. We're going to spend the last half of the show talking the more rare gem dragons, the first of which is the obsidian dragon. Obsidian dragons are the most intelligent of the gem dragons, but they're also the most vicious. They are extremely haughty. They anger easily. and they like to toy with their prey before they finish it off.
Oh, how pleasant.
How delightful. An obsidian dragon has smooth black skin with razor edges where the joints come together.
Mm-hmm.
But when they're first hatched, their scales are gray, rough to touch, well-defined. But as they get older, they darken, they become smoother, and they also begin to blend together. Most obsidian dragons prefer to make their lairs around volcanoes or in one of the mountains of coal found on the elemental plane of fire.
Mm-hmm.
Most great worms, though, make use of the Genesis power to create their own demiplane.
Oh.
And while obsidian dragons... What's that?
Just that'd be great. It's my little demiplane to pooch off into from time to time.
While obsidian dragons do not shy away from combat, they do make quick assessments of the opposition and determine within a couple of rounds whether they can overpower their foes easily. And if not, they retreat to formulate a plan of ambush or to avoid any, you know, particularly powerful right. foes.
They leave to either strategize or just run.
Yeah. Gotcha. They prefer to use their breath weapons and long range tactics to soften up prey before using their physical attacks to finish them off.
Right.
And a favorite finishing tactic of theirs is to snatch an opponent and plane shift to the elemental plane of fire.
Oh.
Yeah. Or to their own demiplane if the environment is hostile enough.
All right then.
Which is wild.
That is so badass.
Man, imagine fighting an obsidian dragon, having him like pluck up one of your party members. You see them disappear, and then you see the obsidian dragon reappear, except your friend's gone. You have no idea where your friend's at.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Up next, we've got the amber dragons.
Mm-hmm.
Amber dragons are perhaps the most solitary and aloof of all the neutral dragons, preferring to wander throughout the heavily forested regions that they call home. And although they're not unfriendly,
mm-hmm.
these dragons are so closely attuned to their natural surroundings that their moods often reflect the capricious nature of the elements.
Ooh, okay.
And they're not territorial per se, but they will quickly dispatch creatures who enter a forest depths with hostile intent.
I see no problem here.
Right. So far, so good.
Don't mess with nature.
Amber dragons possess this thick, bark-like skin that ranges from a dull gray to a dark brown. Their eyes are the color of rich amber. And then mm-hmm. they also have this like long 1 foot horned prow, like sort of.
Oh,
like.
Okay.
In addition,
they're really neat looking.
Yeah, they're pretty cool. In addition, their feet end at these like large, like scythe like claws. They speak their own language as well as various druidic languages. And in fact, they can communicate telepathically with druids. As well as nice. Other forest-dwelling creatures such as elves and gnomes and sprites. So I think this would be the type of dragon, the type of gem dragon you would be.
Possibly.
Very much in tune with nature, with the elements, hanging out
with
druids.
That's just all I want. Like, that's all I want in life.
That's all you've ever wanted.
It really is.
Amber dragons dwell alone in these large primeval coniferous forests and range throughout that expanse, making no permanent lair. And unlike most other dragons, and by most other dragons, I mean all other dragons, these creatures regard gold and other metallic treasures with disdain. So they don't hoard any material objects. So thus, any treasure that you might find, you know, with an amber dragon is purely incidental.
Yeah, okay.
Despite their reputation for getting rid of these hostile outsiders, The Amber Dragon is in no way a, quote, defender of the forest. Rather, these creatures are a force of nature, as many of their abilities stem from their close connection to the natural world.
Oh, cool.
So that's not like, you know, they're these hippie, peace-loving, beatnik dragons. It's just that, you know, because their power comes from the natural world, they, you know,
kind of protect what keeps them powerful.
Exactly.
Yeah, that makes sense.
They do subsist by drinking the thick sap from trees. Ooh. And they extract the sap by plunging that horned prow beneath the bark of a tree. And druids or rangers or anyone that's familiar with amber dragons can detect their presence by the distinctive triangular mark that they leave on the tree by doing this.
Okay.
So again, if you want to include an amber dragon in your adventure or campaign, it's a good way to sort of tease it with the little mark on the
triangular
tree.
Stab holes in the tree.
Triangular little, stab holes.
Little mark? A little mark, really?
I mean, little in the terms of, you know.
Redwoods.
Right. Because there are big marks, and this would be a little one. And finally, we're going to talk the Beldurill dragons. So they are a remnant from a time when oceans of magma lapped against the shores of young continents.
Oh.
A hatchling is dark gray, but slowly develops the coloration of a lava lake. Gray or black plates interspersed with bright red and yellow outlines. An older dragon gradually loses this pattern of colors and develops dark gray and violet scales streaked with incandescent blue and green.
Ooh.
They speak their own language and at least one other language. And it's usually a language that's spoken by those living nearby.
Okay.
So if it's, you know, elves, probably elvish. If it's, you know, more humans, probably common. Which makes sense.
Yeah, pick up the local language.
Right. These dragons inhabit lava lakes formed at the summit of a volcano by an eruption. And this is an awesome environment where curtains of fire and fire fountains periodically appear. And so the lava flowing into these lakes is smooth and sinuous. And then the surface cools into a dark skin, which is torn and cracked by the currents and by the movements of the Beldurill dragons. They rarely leave their lakes except when a new eruption is imminent. And at this time, they take flight, seeking out new lakes or other large concentrations of lava.
Okay. That's how they know it's time to go.
Right. It's like, oh, go leave for now. Maybe we'll come back. I mean, that's a good way to know the volcano is about to erupt if your Beldurill dragon is leaving.
I don't.
Like, hey, where's Barry dragon?
Barry.
Barry the Beldurill dragon.
I like it.
Their lair is a complex consisting of the lava lake, the aforementioned lava lake, and also the surrounding caves and mountains nearby. And I thought this was particularly interesting. They derive their sustenance from seismic energy. And so they have to stay in a seismically active environment to remain healthy.
Oh, okay. That's really neat.
It is cool. And so they don't usually consume gems and minerals like the other gem dragons do.
Right.
But surround themselves with them. If you know, if they are around, they're surrounding themselves with them by filtering the seismic energy needed to survive through these crystalline stones.
Okay.
And in these rare places where they live, Beldurill dragons lay and bury their eggs deep in the earth, and then each dragon is born at the same time as a new volcano.
God, can you imagine that a new volcano is born? Civilization's like, well, shit.
I mean, yeah, at least you know there's a Beldurill dragon being born at the same time.
Yeah. That's
terrifying.
I just love that bit of lore. Like, it doesn't even sound true, like in the traditional mm-hmm. sense. Like, you know, it sounds like
that's
actual
silly.
Lore.
Mm-hmm.
Like anytime a new volcano pops up, a Beldrill dragon is being born.
That's what Grandpa used to say.
Anytime a bell rings, an angel gets his wings. These young wormlings are curious about creatures that they've never seen before. They rarely initiate combat because, for one, their harsh environment shields them from most threats anyway.
Right.
And two, that's just kind of their way. Like, most of these gem dragons don't initiate the combat to begin with.
Yeah.
We
could scrap if you want to scrap. But...
Right. If you want to, if you want to do this, we can do this. But trust me, you don't want to do this.
Right.
One of the only times older dragons seek conflict is when seeking a new home in seismically active territory.
Right. Well, yeah, this makes sense.
And in terms of gem dragons in general, there mm-hmm. was a rage of dragons in 1372 DR.
I've heard about that.
You've heard about that. You're a big fan of the rage of dragons.
I'm a fan.
It sends the other dragons, subraces, all the chromatic and metallic dragons into a frenzy. They go nuts.
Mm-hmm.
They go dragon nuts.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the gem dragons across Faerun use their psionic powers to escape the prime material plane. So they all head to their respective inner planes, you know, where they hang out.
Hey, these guys are about to lose their minds. They are going to flip shit. We should go.
They're going to
let's eat
all the marbles.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And when the rage of dragons finally ended later that year, the gem dragons that had left began to gradually return to Faerun and, you know, pick up where they left off. And I do believe, as a result of that, I might do a Rage of Dragons Patron Plus installment for this episode.
Ooh.
So if you are interested in hearing that, go check out patreon.com/dndlorecast. We talk all about it in the middle of the show. So mm-hmm. if you want more information mm-hmm. on that, you can re-listen to the middle, or you can just check out the show notes.
There you go.
Well, thank you so much for joining me, Lore Mistress Mary.
Oh, you are welcome, Lore Master Sergio.
And thank you for listening. We appreciate you allowing us into your lives for this short amount of time. We hope you enjoyed the show. We hope you come mm-hmm. back. We hope you listen to the archives. We hope you join the Discord. We hope you ask all the D&D questions you may have. We hope you talk all the fun D&D stories that you have. That's mm-hmm. that's what I subsist on. You know, it's not the sap from trees. It's not gems. It's not seismic activity. I survive on D&D stories.
It's true. It's true. He just consumes nerdness, and that's how he exists.
That's it. I consume nerdness. My name is Sergio.
And I am Mary.
Fare thee well, dear listener, and until we meet again, may all your 20s be natural.
Thank you for listening to the Dungeons & Dragons Lorecast. If you've enjoyed the show, consider following us on Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok at @DndLorecast, or jumping into the Robots Radio Discord to chat more with us about Dungeons & Dragons. We'll see you soon.
You've been listening to a Robots Radio podcast. Smart shows for interesting people. Check out all the shows at robotsradio.net.